It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Is it twilight for the Twinkie? From APM, it's the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and Friday is here, everybody. It's November 16th. We'll talk about the hard stop for ho-hos, the last dance for Little Debbie, the swan song for Snowballs. Hostess says it is going out of business. We'll also get into how capital gains tax changes are moving the markets this fall, how at least somebody seems like they might benefit from going over the fiscal cliff, and Eddie Money. Somehow, Eddie Money slipped in there. That's coming up.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Hostess Brands says it plans to go out of business. Hostess makes ho-hos and Twinkies and also owns Little Debbie's and Wonder Bread. The company filed for bankruptcy earlier this year after it had only just emerged from its previous bankruptcy in 2009. Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji is here now with some details on it. Hey, Shireen.
Hi, Jeff.
So is this really the end for Hostess?
It looks that way. The company has told its bankruptcy judge it wants to start liquidating immediately. A baker's union strike started a week ago. Workers are protesting a new contract. And in a statement, Hostess CEO Gregory Rayburn said it just doesn't have the resources to weather an extended strike. So this liquidation scenario will result in Hostess employees getting laid off. And there are more than 18,000 Hostess employees.
But Twinkies, Ho-Hos, Wonder Bread, they can't just pry these things out of our sugar-coated hands, can they?
The company's going to sell its assets to the highest bidders, and that includes those brands that you just mentioned, Ho-Hos, Twinkies. And I spoke with a brand strategist who says someone smart could easily swoop in, take advantage of Twinkies' brand recognition, and make it cool and profitable. His name is Adam Hanft. He's the CEO of Hanft Projects.
I think that there's something very cool and retro about the brand that can be tapped into. I think it could be made a hipper brand for millennials because it is so iconic and, frankly, because it is so unhealthy.
So basically, you know, skinny jeans wearing, bacon and pork belly eating, hipster millennials into mid-century modern post-war cool, well, they might be into Twinkies too.
Well, and they used to say that Twinkies would be the food that could survive the nuclear apocalypse, so they might just survive this too, huh?
That's right. Or the zombie apocalypse.
Right. Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji, thank you.
You're welcome.
And let's do the numbers. Well, I should mention that just a short while ago, congressional leaders stepped outside the White House for a news conference, and they wanted to let people know they have had constructive talks with the president over the fiscal cliff. And what do you know? Just like that, the markets turned positive, or green as they are on my screen, as opposed to red. The Dow at this hour is up about 1/3%, as is the NASDAQ and the S&P. We'll see if that holds for the rest of the day. It could be the first good-looking day this week. U.S. industrial output fell in October. Superstorm Sandy catches much of the blame for that. Well, without a fiscal cliff solution, capital gains taxes, that's our tax on investment income, will increase by 2/3 in the new year. And no matter what happens, capital gains taxes are going up by about 25% as part of paying for health care reform. This is likely a factor in many of the decisions that businesses and investors are making right now. Chris Lowe is chief economist with FTN Financial, and he is with me now, as he is on many Fridays. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good, thanks. So we've been seeing steady selling of stocks all week long. We're seeing it again so far this morning. Is that what you generally expect with the capital gains tax changes?
Yes, it's exactly what you expect. And I think the reason you can tell that it's capital gains changes that are driving the selling is by looking at where the weakest places are. Not surprisingly, it's the stocks with the biggest gains. Apple, for example, is down about 10% since the election. It's down 25% since the peak. But if you go back and look at it compared to a year ago, there's still some pretty decent gains there. That's exactly the kind of stock you would expect people to sell if they're trying to protect themselves from a bigger capital gains tax.
There's also some buzz out there that, of course, George Lucas decided to pull the trigger on selling Star Wars to Disney right now of all times, maybe because of the capital gains changes. Who's to say?
Exactly. And in fact, you're seeing a lot of that kind of behavior.
And Chris, so should ordinary investors follow, I don't know, maybe George Lucas and other, you know, the big money, as we say, and start selling to lock in their gains?
Well, there's probably two reasons not to do it. First off, if you're investing like most of us do in a retirement account, then chances are it's tax protected anyway, and so none of this applies. If you're investing outside of a tax protected account, most stock advisors recommend not making decisions based on tax changes. And one reason for that is once we get to the end of the year, there's no reason to sell anymore. There'll be a pile of cash on the sidelines, and it probably comes back into the market pretty quickly. If you're not very nimble, you'll miss the move. And so most recommend that you ride it out.
All right. We got to move along here too. Chris Lowe, Chief Economist at FTN Financial. Thanks, as always.
Thank you.
We have talked on Marketplace and on the podcast here about the consequences of going over the fiscal cliff for business, for individuals, and of course for the federal government. But not getting a deal could actually mean more money for states, as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
As part of the fiscal cliff negotiations, lawmakers are reconsidering tax deductions. For example, the feds may stop teachers from deducting school expenses. They may scrap deductions for tuition and fees, too. Verenda Smith is deputy director of the Federation of Tax Administrators.
If the federal government decides not to offer those two deductions for the current tax year, then that would increase the state tax by a little bit.
Possibly more than a little bit. States generally use the adjusted gross income figure from the federal tax forms. And if that increases because Americans can take fewer deductions, the states get a larger pool of money to tax. Jason Fichtner is a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center.
What could be for one person a $40 or $50 deduction when spread over hundreds of thousands of people can add up to millions of dollars of tax implications.
An extra million here or there isn't always a blessing. State budget planners might prefer to know how much revenue to expect. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
And now just a quick correction to a story that we brought you on Wednesday. It was about a streetcar system that's planned for Kansas City. We should have mentioned that the organization trying to raise money for the system through donations has raised just a small fraction of its overall goal. In addition, voters there are considering a sales tax to pay for the streetcars. Moving on to something totally different. Stanford and MIT have drawn lots of attention for their free online courses. These things have become known as MOOCs, massive open online courses, because thousands of students can enroll at a time. Well, this week, another group of universities announced its own take on online education. And you can sort of think of this as kind of the anti-MOOC. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR, here's Amy Scott.
There's a moment in John Kovach's course on the history of rock music when he takes apart the song that launched the so-called British invasion. I think you'll
understand. It turns out that about 95% of the musical features of I Want to Hold Your Hand are actually in the American popular music tradition.
Intrigued? Until now, only students at the University of Rochester could take Kovach's class. Starting next fall, it'll be open to students at Duke, Northwestern, and Vanderbilt, online. Rochester is one of 10 universities teaming up to offer online courses to one another's students. Students from outside can also apply. Unlike massive online courses, these classes will be small.
What we're trying to do is create a smaller, more intimate teaching environment, one in which, you know, if we have 25 or 30 students, it might even be possible on a single screen to have those students, the equivalent of sort of Skyped in.
Think the opening credits of The Brady Bunch. Also, unlike most free online courses, students will earn full college credit. Ed Macias is provost of Washington University in St. Louis.
We want the online learning experience to be as rich and robust as that we have already in our in-classroom experience.
Speaking of rich, that experience will cost just as much as traditional classes, roughly $4,000 a course. Anya Kamenetz writes about innovation in higher ed. She says part of the promise of technology is to bring costs down.
If you want to charge that premium price, I think you have to provide a premium experience. And I don't think that video chat is necessarily going to do that, at least not the way that I've seen it.
Founders of the program, called Semester Online, say the goal isn't to bring down costs, at least for now. It's to reach students wherever they are. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And hey, you know, if you can go to school online, why can't you set up your office in your car? This week, German police pulled over a man who was speeding in a Ford station wagon, and they discovered that his passenger seat had been converted into kind of the ultimate road warrior setup, a custom wood frame that held a laptop sitting in a dock. There was a printer, a wireless router, all the antennas you need to get an internet signal, all this powered by an inverter from the cigarette lighter. But because the cops had no evidence that he had actually used any of this while moving, he got off with just the speeding ticket.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
In Spain, the government is suspending foreclosures for the neediest homeowners. The move comes 1 week after a woman there committed suicide as officials arrived to remove her from her apartment. The BBC's Tom Burridge reports from Madrid.
Households earning less than $2,000 a month will be spared. So will families with young kids, and if a family member is disabled. The rule changes come as Spain's banks, which have foreclosed on so many homes, are receiving billions of dollars in bailout money. And that's why Carlos Cuey from Spain's El País newspaper says the banks had to act.
We are giving our money to the banks. The minimum is that we want back some solidarity from the banks and some changes, big changes.
But the problem is that a deep recession is expected in Spain next year. Unemployment here is 25% and rising. So the number of people who can't pay their mortgages is increasing too. In Madrid, I'm the BBC's Tom Burridge for Marketplace.
Tonight, CBS is airing a tribute to Whitney Houston. She died in February, and doctors say chronic cocaine use had more than a little to do with it. Seems like kind of a familiar story, in show business at least. So earlier today, my colleague Jeremy Hobson talked with one guy who has some personal experience with this kind of thing, Eddie Money. Remember Eddie Money? Here's Jeremy.
Let me ask you, first of all, to take us back to, I guess, the late 70s, which is when you were first coming on to the scene as a music celebrity. And what happened right after that when it comes to drugs?
You know what it was? I really don't know. You know, you think you're invulnerable, so to speak, you know, and, you know, you don't want to get too high. But, you know, you used to drink a lot of booze and then you get too, you know, too slurry and swayy. And then, you know, you'd do some cocaine for some pick-me-up, and you know, or then if you were doing too much cocaine, you drink booze because you were too nervous, you find that happy medium. But it's not something that I recommend at all. In 1980, I had a drug overdose. It was really horrible. I couldn't walk for an entire year.
Wow.
So I've had my bouts with that.
Well, so when you watch movies these days, you see, you know, whether it's a biography of Johnny Cash or Ray Charles or whoever, it does seem like there's a pretty standard line for celebrity rock stars, especially, that they achieve great success and then they face a real problem with addiction.
Yes, that could be very true. I mean, a lot of people that I know when I was coming up before I was famous, I mean, I never did cocaine because it was very expensive and things like that. But when you become, you know, when you become big, you know, next thing you know, you're with, you know, hanging out with Truman Capote and Andy Warhol and everybody else. And, you know, people are passing that little vial around the room. And, you know, before you know it, you're copping a bunch of blow and, you know, you're by yourself and you got to get up and go to the airport the next day. You wind up doing it all. It is a vicious cycle.
Well, of course, the most recent example of this is Whitney Houston. And I think a lot of fans saw that and wondered, how could she have gotten to this point with such a successful career behind her?
Well, you know what? It's all about the rush, you know? It's the euphoric feeling that you get from drugs. That's what the addicting part is, you know? Now you get all these kids today, you know, hitting that glass pipe with methadrine in it. Thank God that wasn't around when I was coming up, you know? You know, because when you got a lot of money, you go for the best. I'm sure Whitney was smoking, you know, smoking crack and smoking cocaine because she had the money to do it. And I don't know. It's just you chase that euphoric feeling. I don't know what it is.
Well, what was it that saved you before it was too late?
What saved me is I just, well, I had a major overdose, which was horrible. I couldn't, you know, I was using a walker to get from my bedroom to my music room to make the No Control album. And, you know, you just have to say to yourself, enough is enough, you know?
Eddie Money, thank you so much, and thanks for being so candid with us.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a great day.
And, of course, we can't hear from Eddie Money without playing Eddie Money, so here you go. And finally on this Friday, good news for a Goodwill in Tacoma, Washington. Amid the usual clothes and housewares, somebody dropped off a signed sketch by Salvador Dali. It's a hand with a bent watch pointing at a picture of a mountain, and there's some kind of head or something floating in the corner. Anyway, it's a Salvador Dali. You can bid on it if you want to. It's at shopgoodwill.com. And the price, when I looked at it a little earlier this morning, was sitting at $9,100. Nice little fundraiser, unexpected, for the Goodwill in Tacoma. That's all for today's Marketplace Midday Update and for this week's Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.